ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The best design? You never notice it. The kettle, the beanbag, the umbrella, they look the way they do because someone somewhere made a decision and that decision stuck. What does that say about them? And what does it say about us? The objects all around you have a story. Hear them on By Design with me, Anthony Burke. Search By Design on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, it's Geraldine Doogue here with Global Roaming. A little bit of a different episode because on this big long weekend around Australia, we thought it was perfect to bring back to you the discussion that Latika Burke, my colleague, and I had with Michael Ignatieff. Here he is now. Well, for all the drama of Davos, there was one unusually committed address that cut through all the rest, and we just might be talking about it for years to come.
Canada's Mark Carney brought conviction to the international top table. Nations should acknowledge the truth, he said, and stop pretending that the post-war order that we've known still functions.
Middle powers like Australia do have clout, he says, if they work together to look superpowers in the eye. The question is, what does it ask of the people of Canada and, by extension, all of us?
I'm Latika Burke.
I'm Geraldine Doogue. Today, Global Roaming is thinking, oh, Canada.
Oh, Canada.
Well, hard to resist a burst of Michael Bublé for this episode, but you know those words, Latika, that lyrics of Canada's national song.
The true north strong and free.
The true north strong and free. O Canada, we stand on guard for thee. Boy, that's the emotions that I presume are running riot at the moment in Canada after Carney's speech, I wonder.
Yes, well, Mark Carney earned himself a standing ovation at Davos, Geraldine. That's actually very rare. It doesn't usually happen at Davos. And what prompted that? Calling out the new reality in which we all exist.
And the question for middle powers like Canada is not whether to adapt to the new reality. We must. The question is whether we adapt by simply building higher walls or whether we can do something more ambitious.
He declared American hegemony unfair and a fiction. It was some pretty lofty, poetic rhetoric in his speech, but I thought the message was very plain. Hegemony under Donald Trump's America is a fool's game.
He wrote it himself. We heard Carney wrote it himself. He made an argument that hegemons only succeed when everybody else, in effect, plays by those games.
We knew the story of the international rules-based order was partially false, that the strongest would exempt themselves when convenient, that trade rules were enforced asymmetrically. And we knew that international law applied with varying rigor depending on the identity of the accused or the victim. This fiction was useful. And American hegemony in particular helped provide public goods, open sea lanes, a stable financial system, collective security, and support for frameworks for resolving disputes. So we placed the sign in the window. We participated in the rituals. And we largely avoided calling out the gaps between rhetoric and reality. This bargain no longer works.
Now, can he transmit that to other people who've got to face elections? Can he quickly enough get that message over to the peoples of middle powers everywhere, including places like Australia? I mean, that's what I'm left wondering.
And what exactly was the call to action, Geraldine? Further to your point, there is a risk here, I think, that some of this is performative but might not end up being transformative.
Yes, look, the man we're about to speak to now is just so perfectly positioned to comment because, like Mark Carney, Michael Ignatieff also led Canada's Liberal Party. He was opposition leader from 2008 to 2011. He was an academic who, in his own words, failed dramatically at politics, but he's a marvellous author on politics. These days he's based in Vienna, where he's a professor of history at the Central European University. And last time we spoke to him, about a year ago, Trump had just taken power. Canada was on the brink of a trade war. Now again, it's cruising towards a tariff showdown with its southern neighbour. I think it's very timely that we speak to Michael Ignatieff. Here he is now. Michael Ignatieff, big welcome to Global Roaming.
Nice to be here.
Look, why do you think Mark Carney wanted to communicate in that way to delegates at Davos? What did he need them to take away from his address?
Well, this is not a knock on Mark Carney, who I think is the right prime minister for my country right at the moment, and I've known for a while, but he's a Davos guy. So he knows his audience. He has perfect pitch for that audience. And I think he was trying to do two things. He was essentially, as a medium-sized country, Canada's big in geography, but we're small, 40, 45 million people. So we need friends. And he was trying to rally friends around facing a certain reality, which is the international order that Canada has prospered in and Australia's prospered in is over. His second point was, we were always a little innocent about how dependent that old order was on pure, raw, great power politics. Now, all the elements of international law are stripped away, and we are faced with three powers vying for global dominance in a much more naked way than we grew up in. His purpose is, I think, to create an alliance of Europeans, Australians, New Zealanders, possibly the Brazilians. I mean, there are a lot of countries out there that look like middle-ranking countries that are trying to escape being crushed between the millstones of these empires. So he's on a recruiting mission. Join us to do trade deals, to do defense of each other, to strengthen bonds outside the linkages that we took for granted. He's saying that domestically to his Canadian audience. He's saying, you've spent 30 years cozied up to the United States, not facing certain challenges because it was so easy just to ship your stuff south. Wake up, folks, that world is over. We've got to recover our agency as masters of our fate. He took an enormous risk, however, because Trump immediately replied and said, I'm going to tariff your country. And so the consequences were immediate. My judgment is that he assumed before he gave the speech that any free trade deal with the United States was dead in the water. There was nothing he could say that could save it. And so he might as well speak the truth. That's my sense of the rationale for that speech.
So if Mark Carney is a guy cutting his losses, can Canada afford the price?
Great question, Atika. Great question, because we're like Australia. You know, we've got huge natural resources in the ground, highly educated population, long history, lots of advantages. We speak the global language. I could go on. But the problem here is that we've been dependent on the United States so long that it'll take us 10 years to get right-sized for the 21st century economy. That is to say, we have to overcome some internal trade barriers. I don't know what you got in Australia, but we have ridiculous difficulties. If you make wine in, you know, British Columbia, it's difficult to sell it in Ontario. It's nuts. Okay, so we need to get rid of that. Then we need to build some infrastructure to get our exports to the ports. We need to strengthen the east-west connectors in our country. Our country is vastly wide, and all our connectors are north-south. Our electricity grids go south to the States. Our oil pipelines go south to the States, so we've got to strengthen the east-west connectors. And then we've got to diversify markets. We've got to sell a lot more to Australia. We've got to sell more to, you know, we used to sell all of our lobster to Boston, easy, one-stop shopping. Now we have to sell it to paella makers in Spain or I don't know whether Australia needs some lobsters, but we
no, we don't. We've got our own, and we've been trying to sell them to China.
We've got plenty of lobster. Okay. We can respond to the Trump challenge, but it's going to take us a long, hard slog to get our economy ready to meet that challenge, and we're not ready yet. That means we don't have leverage when dealing with Trump. Trump is assuming that we are so dependent on the Americans that we'll cave. And so we have to go into any negotiations, if there are any, and say, we're not going to cave. It'll take us a while. We'll take a hit. And domestically, he has to absorb the political cost, the political price of getting hit before he's built the economy that he needs in order to survive. So it's a tough situation.
I must say, one of the lines from his speech that I don't think has had the attention it deserved was really gutsy, I thought. You cannot live within the lie of mutual benefit through integration when that integration becomes the source of your subordination. Now, you know, there was an awful truth in that, I'm afraid, that you can't just turn on a dime.
Yeah. Well, truer words were never spoken. Our economic subordination, most presidents of the United States didn't exploit it or extort it. I mean, sometimes they put the frighteners on us. I mean, Nixon gave Pierre Trudeau a hard time. But by and large, the United States did not use trade as a political weapon to force the prime minister of the country to shut up and not say what he wants to say in an international forum. Trump doesn't play by those rules at all. And so we are in a much tougher, much more aggressive situation than we have ever been before. But as I've said to some Canadian audiences, it's important to remember that Canadians, as Canadians, get on extremely well with Americans. It's an easy relationship, in fact, and a million of us live in the United States. The relationship between a prime minister and a president, on the other hand, is strictly business and obeys certain very tough rules. And we had a prime minister in the 1960s, a great man, Lester Pearson, who tried to tell LBJ, Lyndon Johnson, to stop bombing North Vietnam. Lyndon Johnson, it's a true story, picked our Canadian prime minister up by the lapels and shook him and said, don't come to my house and piss on the carpet, and dropped him. That's how power is exercised by the American president towards a Canadian prime minister when he wants to. Canadians understand that. And they've pushed back, and we've pushed back, and we've maintained our national independence for 150 years, and we keep on going. But these are the hard rules of the game.
Michael, do you think that Donald Trump is just trying to subdue and shut up, to use your phrase, Mark Carney? Or do you actually think that he is more sinister? He made this very gripping line in his Davos speech saying, remember, Canada, that you only live because of the United States. And he's regularly talked about making Canada the 51st state. Do you think he's real about that? And do Canadians think he's real about that?
I think Canadians think he means it. And I think that's why Mark Carney is prime minister. I mean, it's an extraordinary story. He was 20 points back in the polls, and all the smart money said he's going to lose. And my party came from behind and won simply because people said, if that president is serious about wanting us to disappear, we need the smartest and most competent guy we can find in the chair. And so they chose Carney. But I think there's something deeper here that should concern Australians, because it's not really just about Canada. I don't think Trump fundamentally respects or believes in the sovereignty of any country, okay? Any country. This is not just about Canada. People have made the point that he doesn't get the idea of the Westphalian order, you know, created in 1945 by the UN Charter. I mean, he thinks it's all just real estate. You make an offer, you make a deal. And it's all very personal. You make a deal with Mr. Putin. You make a deal with Mr. Xi. You make a deal for Canada. You make a deal for Greenland. The fact that Greenland is the sovereign territory of a NATO ally is somehow completely irrelevant. So the treatment of Canada is consistent with a pattern that just regards international law as a kind of weird irrelevance.
So this brings me very neatly to the dilemma and the predicament for other middle powers, because if Mark Carney's Davos speech was a clarion call to fellow middle powers, like you've just rightly identified, where does this leave other middle powers in how to respond? Because in Australia, our Prime Minister has been very, very careful and very cautious about commenting, let alone criticising anything that Donald Trump says. What is Mark Carney trying to achieve, and how dangerous is that for fellow middle powers to follow along?
I can understand why the Australian Prime Minister is being very cautious to bait the bear. You're in a very difficult security environment. You're big trading partners with China. You've got China up there close to you. It's very important for you to maintain a close security relationship with the United States. And any responsible prime minister plays that very, very carefully. But there's a point at which you have to say no. I think the Europeans learned this over the Greenland issue. I think Canada is slowly learning it over its bilateral relationship. We are not helpless pawns in an imperial game. We're a big, long, huge country that's been around for a while. And if you want to defend the North against strategic threats, you have to deal with Canada. If you want a whole bunch of things that we have, critical minerals, oil, fuel, electricity, we provide electricity for most of the American Northeast. I mean, they've just got to face up to the fact that the dependencies all don't run one way. So a smart prime minister has to use that as leverage to say no a couple of times. And I don't think there's any other way to just remind this president that there is such a thing as state sovereignty, there is such a thing as national interests, and not everything is fungible or responsive to pressure.
No, but can I interrupt? You yourself have said recently that when Canadians have been faced with this dilemma articulated as to whether they yes. wanted sort of more independence or whether they wanted more integration over many years,
yes.
the Canadians have basically said, oh, no, we do want integration. And I mean, this is exactly the dilemma for Australia too, which is why we're watching this with such keen interest, because we really would love to be able to stand on our own 2 feet more, but we've got a lot of work to do to establish new relationships in the region, which are there, but you know, don't seem to be nearly as big as the one we've had with the Americans. So, you know, the citizenry of Canada, how do you think they're sitting around and talking about all of this, Michael?
You're absolutely right to call me on this and remind me of what I've recently written about this, because it looks as if I'm contradicting myself, but I don't think I am. In 1987-8, we had a huge election about whether to accept a free trade deal with the United States. And the election result was very clear. My party opposed a free trade deal. Brian Mulroney, the then prime minister, promoted a free trade deal. And Mulroney won. It was put to the people, and the people said, we do want more internet. We want economic integration with the United States. It's in our national interest. That worked because the United States didn't have presidents who said, I'd actually like your real estate, and actually you shouldn't exist. So I think what was true in 1988 is not true in 2025 because the president's changed. And that changes everything. We need more leverage. We need to do some hard work. We need to look ourselves in the mirror and ask ourselves tough questions, for example, about our productivity. Our productivity is falling relative to American productivity, which is increasing. Why does that matter? Because if you live next to the United States and you see their standard of living rising consistently while ours stagnates and falls, what's the solution? Canadians of the next generation move south, right? You go to the Boston phone book. The Boston phone book is full of French Canadian names. Why? Because they left in the 19th century because they didn't have a future. So Canada has an existential challenge to provide a future for its citizens. And that means it has to get its economic house in order. This is real time stuff on which the fate of nations are played out. And I'm sure Australia has similar challenges.
Michael, Mark Carney made his Davos speech just a few days after returning from Beijing, where he signed a strategic partnership and a great unthawing of Canada-China relations. Of course, we all followed the case of the two Michaels, where China kidnapped two citizens, kept them hostage over the Huawei case, and Australia is no stranger to economic coercion from China. Do you think Mark Carney would ever have given this speech at Davos about China?
I think the speech mentioned none of the great powers by name, but that means he was mentioning all of them by name. The United States is not the only one using globalization linkages as coercive pressure. The Chinese are doing it all the time. I think what he's saying is a middle power is going to have to play both of them off against each other. And that's what he's trying to do. He's saying to Trump, you think you've jammed me, excuse me, I can go to China and get them to import 70,000 Chinese vehicles, okay? But don't tell me who I can trade with, because I can trade with other people beside you. And frankly, the Australians will have to say that to the Americans and to other partners. This is what it means to be a middle power. You got to play both sides. And it's a mistake, in fact, to say China's my friend and America's my... No, it doesn't work that way. It's an authoritarian single-party regime with a ruthless use of economic coercion. It's as bad as the Americans. It's just different, right? And that's the world we're in.
Look, final question. As people have said to me, he used that word, Mark Carney, this is a rupture, not a transition. And some have said, no, that is overcalling it. What do you think? Do you think America is never going to return in any shape or form to the more malleable partner that we thought we had?
Oh, God. Such a difficult question. Such a great one. It's the one we're all thinking about. My view of this is that something irrevocable has happened. I think it partly because it didn't happen with Trump. It began... If you look in the 70s, 80s, you begin to see an increasing, rising disillusion with globalization on the one hand, and an increasing disillusion with American endless wars. Put the two together, and it begins to say globalization is not working for us. It's dragging us into conflicts, which we don't have any real business. It's forcing us to do a lot of things, helping allies, and we don't get anything in return. Once trust is broken, and it has been radically broken, I just don't think anybody in their right mind in the middling countries is going to trust America again, and that creates its own dynamic. And so I don't know what the shape of the world is going to be. The one thing I take from Carney's speech is we do not want to wait, neither Australia nor Canada, to wait for the big boys to tell us what the next world is going to look like. We have to go out and fight as best we can using all the leverage we have to create the world we want. And that, to me, is the core of the Carney message. And I, within all the limits that we know that middle countries have, I think that's the right way for both Australia and Canada to go.
That's a wonderful epilogue for us. Thank you very much indeed, Michael Ignatieff, for joining us again.
Pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, very much a call to arms, I must say, Latika, from Michael Ignatieff. You know, I was thinking as he was speaking, do we have the grit, do people in sort of middle nation, middle powers, have the grit that the Ukrainians are showing? Honestly, I wonder. I really wonder about that.
I really wonder too how effective this call of Carney's will be. And the timidity of so many middle powers that he's talking about. I don't sense there's a great move or a gravitational pull to rewrite an order. I think there's a mood and an inclination to show a bit of backslapping and we're here with your pal. Yep, we agree, we're not our heads. What does that turn into though, Geraldine?
What it might really do, and this is what I'm going to watch for, is that it particularly emboldens Europe. I mean, Europe did look to me to be rather different this week. The combination of the outrageous claims about lack of blood being spilt to defend America,
US President Donald Trump has again caused outrage among his NATO allies, this time for saying soldiers from the alliance didn't fight on the front line after 9/11.
We've never needed them. We have never really asked anything of them. You know, they'll say they sent some troops to Afghanistan or this or that. And they did. They stayed a little back, a little off the front lines.
The British went absolutely berserk when Trump suggested that fighters deployed to Afghanistan stayed off the front line. I mean, the UK, where I am, lost more than 400. And of course, Australia made a massive contribution to this. This is beyond offensive. And Keir Starmer and the King of England made that very clear to Donald Trump. This is new territory for Trump.
I thought Starmer could have been a bit faster off his feet, but anyway, because we looked at Starmer last week on Global.
I thought Donald Trump's contributions to Davos will also be the bookend, I guess, to Carney's speech. Trump came, he didn't exactly wow. He staged a retreat on Greenland. I do start to wonder, Geraldine, if this is the start of the shift of how we've been perceiving and dealing with Trump. We did see pushback over Greenland from Europe. They have a lot more leverage than a country like Canada, of course. But it also yielded a result. And I think that's being quietly noticed by a lot of onlookers who may be quiet at the moment.
Well, what do you mean? Because Anthony Scaramucci says this too, that he thinks this sort of the beginning, well, he sort of doesn't say the beginning of the end, but he hints at it. I'm trying to make up my mind because I feel like I've lost my judgment about Trump. Why do you think that this has a sort of portentous feel about it?
Because I think it comes against the backdrop of what's happening domestically. ICE and the raids there are not going as planned. Trump is overreaching in the way that his response to a legitimate concern about immigration is being carried out. Inflation is still high. Midterms are looming. Trump has already said he's going to have to spend more of this year at home and not on foreign policy adventures, i.e. a subtle acknowledgement that his foreign policy is not even that necessarily wildly popular at home, even though that's how we've all come to see and understand and define Trump. And I do think this pushback from Europe was really significant. If there is any player that has anything to push back with, it's probably Europe. And they did it. It was very, very careful. I spoke to a lot of people who were involved with this. It was very perfectly calibrated. It was a very tense week, but it paid off. And I think that is something that Trump has not shown us before, a willingness to retreat, not just on Greenland, but on these awful comments he made about Afghanistan.
Look, just finally, it is interesting that so much of this is being played out in public, and I think maybe increasingly a little more in private as well. I heard the Finnish president, Alexander Stubb, making the point that good diplomacy is that which is conducted in private, and you often reserve your biggest power punch for a private conversation that you certainly don't flag in public.
But the other thing I would say too is it can go too far. Look what Volodymyr Zelensky did last year in the Oval Office when JD press, you know, basically picked a fight, I think, with Zelensky. It all blew up and it was terrible. Ukrainians paid that price. This is high stakes. The costs are enormous and the stakes are very high. And back to where we began, I really question just what price Canada can afford to pay for what Mark Carney said and what he is hoping to outline, however noble his goals are. I really wonder how much of that we're going to see take shape.
Well, I do hope that sort of soothed you. I think it's designed to both soothe and provoke. Michael Ignatieff, Ignatieff. You might like to seek out a marvellous book he wrote, a real classic, Isaiah Berlin, A Life, and also On Consolation, Finding Solace in Dark Times. He's a lovely writer, and I hope you enjoyed that conversation. We'll be back tomorrow. Bye-bye for now.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.